Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, May 25th, 2013. This is episode 981. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk about, you know, tech, computers, and the internet, and home theater, and digital photography, and all that jazz. Actually, our home theater guy, Scott Wilkinson, joins us at 33 and a third after the hour to talk about big screen TVs and surround sound and all that stuff. My phone number, if you have a question or a comment or a suggestion, you want to talk high tech with me, I'd love to hear from you. It's 8888-ASK-LEO. You'll be talking to Heather, and she'll get you all set up so you can be on the show. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. So, let's see. Wow. This has been an interesting week. Yahoo announced a new Flickr, which we use, you know, for our Tech Guy photo assignments. We've always loved Flickr, but the new Flickr, I think, is quite beautiful. And I love it that they've really kind of enhanced the free version of Flickr. A terabyte, 1,000 gigabytes, 1 million megabytes of storage. That's a lot of storage for free. So that's nice. That's nice. And it's a very nice new layout. So we'll continue to use our Tech Guy group there. If you are a photographer, you're an aspiring photographer, and you'd like to take pictures, Chris Marquardt will be here, I think, next week to review our current assignment, which is ICE. And you can see who's done what so far if you go to Flickr.com and go to the, you know, find groups, Tech Guy group. It's, you know, it's the big one. It's got like 10,000 images up there now. Yahoo also announced they're going to buy Tumblr. And, of course, this is the universal internet reaction to any change. I quit. No, I didn't quit. But that's what happens, isn't it? We just hate change. I don't like it, whatever it is, and I'm quitting. I'm goodbye. And the folks at WordPress, Matt Mullenweg over there, said in the first hour after the announcement, 72,000 blogs moved to WordPress.com. That's a little, come on, Matt. That's a little opportunistic. Yes, you're, no. First of all, the transition won't happen for 6 months. It takes 6 months for a deal like that to close. Second, and we talked a little bit about this last weekend because it was supposedly about to happen. But second, who knows what Yahoo is going to do with it? I doubt they'll change it much. They'd be crazy to. And the model for this is what YouTube happened. What happened to YouTube on Google? Google spent billions of dollars on YouTube, and it really has kept it pretty much as an independent entity ever since. And I suspect the same thing with Tumblr. They understand the reason Yahoo wants Tumblr is they want all the young folks who use Tumblr now, the kids. You know, that's what everybody wants. The kids, not us old folks, old fogies. No. They want the kids. Well, that's the children are the future, I think, as the song goes. But the kids are apparently abandoning Facebook to some degree. That doesn't surprise me. As soon as mom and dad start using Facebook, it's like, I don't know, I'm not going to put my stuff there. So Instagram was the first site to really benefit from that. Twitter still continues to benefit quite a bit. The kids like... According to a study I just saw, the kids seem to like the simplicity of Twitter, the stupidity of Twitter. You only get 140 letters, so, you know, it's a text message. Snapchat, you know, is another popular one with the kids because they can take pictures that are immediately, you know, self-destructed, like Mission Impossible, which, of course, they have, when I say that, they think, Tom Cruise? I don't know. What are they talking about? This message will self-destruct in 15 seconds. Snapchat is so strange. It's an iPhone and Android app. You take a picture, send it to your friend. Your friend can look at it for 10 seconds or I think as much as 30 seconds, and then it self-destructs. Except kids, just a little reminder, when you put stuff on the internet, you just should not assume that it's going to be private forever or ever. turns out Snapchat isn't really deleting the messages, you know. They're just, they delete them from the interface, but they're all still there on the storage device and the cache. And so really, it's not private. So just keep that in mind. Then they, so the Instagram, of course, Facebook bought Instagram saying, yikes, the kids, they're going to Instagram. So they bought Instagram. And then they did try to make a Facebook tried to make a Snapchat clone. Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, reportedly wrote the new poke. And the kids said, no, thank you. We have Snapchat. And then when the kids want something that's lasts a little longer or they want a quick blog, it's Tumblr. I just looked back because I've had a Tumblr since the very, very beginning. I fell in love with it right away. I had been looking for something like that, something that was made it very easy to just slap up a picture or a quote, or you know, just a quick. The idea precedes Tumblr. It was called a Tumblelog, and the idea was, you know, you're not writing big elaborate paragraphs of text. You just, you know, oh, look what I saw. Here's a picture of something I saw, and David Karp was 19 years old, high school dropout, doing web design. And he said, I think I could do this, make it nice and easy. And in 2007, he launched Tumblr. I got my first Tumblr, leo.tumblr.net, I guess it was. I think it's .com now, leo.tumblr.net, February 2007. But it really took off when my buddy Gina Trapani wrote about it on Lifehacker. Remember the Lifehacker blog? What a great blog that was. I guess it's still around. But Gina founded that, and she said, oh, look at this neat new way to blog. But I just want to say I was using it a month before that. Might have had something. We might have mentioned it on the radio show a few times. I should get a little credit, you know? But really what gets credit is they tapped into something. Kids really, young people, and actually me too, loved having somewhere we could just easily slap a picture up. The other thing they did that was brilliant was they made it very easy for you looking at your Tumblr to say, oh, I like that, and to reblog it. And so reblogging was kind of in some ways the soul of Tumblr. So I still use Tumblr. I don't do it really kind of intentionally. What happens is on my Tumblr is when I post something on another page like Path, it automatically goes up to Tumblr. But a lot of my pictures end up on Tumblr, and it's a fun. I just think it's fun. It's a very easy to use. The designs are simple. It's just a way of storing your stuff. But man, it's a nice story because he was 19 years old. Six years ago, and now here he is. He's 26 now, so I guess 7 years ago. And David Karp gets $1.1 billion in cash from Yahoo. And of that, I think he's going to get around $250 million cash. And he has to stick around for 4 years. So when he's 30, he'll have a quarter of a billion in the bank and nothing to do. Yeah. Yeah, put it in the savings account, says Patterson in our chat room. You want to make snarky comments? That's a good place to do it, the chat room. Our website is techguylabs.com. You can join us there and chat with us. And I'd love to see you. Heather will answer your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO. Techguylabs.com. Click the chat link. You'll get in the chat. What else? Oh, we're building the Death Star. Hey, John or Alex, if you can give me a shot for those watching at home of the Death Star, let's put it on six. Because Jeffrey Needles, who is my intern, lowly intern, has apparently a collection of Lego Star Wars stuff, Yoda and C-3PO. And he came to me and said, this would be really cool to build this. And $400 later, holy cow. He's got all the pieces. When did Jeff start this morning? What time did you start this morning, Jeff? 8 a.m., 9 a.m.? He's already done a couple hours from yesterday, and now he's got the foundation there. You got to include, very important, include that ventilation, that air ventilation at the end of the trough there so that Luke can destroy it if need be. We'll check in through the show, see how Jeff is doing. Building the Death Star on his day off. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your calls coming up.
Blinded by the light.
I love it.
Wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night. Blinded.
Not only that, the Manfred Mann Earth Band version of Blinded by the Light. Now that is special. Special, special. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Nathan, our musical director, who has picked a perfectly apropos song for today. Because I was, in fact, in the middle of the night blinded by the light. I've talked about these, haven't I? These Hue lights from Philips. I think they're fabulous, but there is a bug. There's a little glitch in them. So the idea is these are LED bulbs, but they're not your everyday LED bulbs. And by the way, LED bulbs are great. As they've finally dropped in price, they really make a lot of sense. Low power, very, very low power, and they last pretty much a lifetime, 10,000 hours, something like that, before they even start to dim. So they're really a much more eco-friendly replacement for incandescent bulbs and even for the compact fluorescents. Some of them are dimmable and stuff, but these ones from Philips are kind of interesting. And I'm sure they'll drop in price. They're a little pricey right now, $60 a bulb. Although, you know, I'd have to do the math. Given how long they last and how low power they are, it might be they're not much more expensive than a, you know, 10 incandescent lights over the life of that. But the cool thing is they're what they call RGB. They have red, green, and blue all in one bulb. And so you can, in software, they're attached to the Wi-Fi. You have a base unit that you plug into your router, and then the base unit communicates with the bulbs. And you can make the bulb any color at all. Since they have R, G, and B, red, green, and blue, any combination thereof, you can make it any color at all. Each bulb is controllable individually. And then the software, which you can get on the iPad, the iPhone, or the Android devices, lets you pick. You could, for instance, take, the light in Greece is so gorgeous, isn't it? It's beautiful. There's something about it. Or Mexico, so beautiful. So you take a picture of that. Or the sunset. This is a gorgeous sunset. So you take a picture of that with your smartphone, and then you can assign each bulb a color from that picture, from that image. Or you can have them be, you know, daylight bright or evening sunset yellow. You can, any color. And it's all programmable. So you can say, okay, give me the sunset mode now. I think it's a very interesting idea, but there's a flaw, and I found out what the flaw was. At 1:48 in the morning the other day, I was blinded by the light because, and I understand why this is, but you've got your lights all programmed. When you turn them off and then turn them on again, they don't go back to that state they were in. They go to full bright, all on, which is useful because if, you know, you lost your shoe in the room and you want to get bright light, you just turn them off and on again. But the drawback is we had a little power outage in the middle of the night the other night. And I had left the lights on. I turned them off in software. But they still had power. And as soon as the power came back on, the lights thought I had turned them on. They all went 1:48 in the morning, full bright. I was blinded by the light. That is not a nice way to jump out of bed. It's like a catapult. And then, of course, being the geek that I am, I immediately reached for my smartphone and to run the software to turn off the lights. And of course, it's all slowly, you know. And then, and fortunately, my girlfriend, being a woman, is a little smarter. And she she reached for the switch and just turned them off. Yeah, kind of beat me to the punch. That was smart. So now when I go to bed, I turn the lights off, physically turn them off. By the switch. Which is not convenient because I was assuming I'd be able to control these, so the switches are in obscure places. And it is not easy living on the bleeding edge. Not at all. All right, Heather has been gathering lovely people for us to talk to on the show. Heather, who should I start with in all of this?
Can we do Peter in Placentia, California?
I think we can handle it. I have the technology. Woohoo! Woo-hoo. Peter, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Leo, how's it going? Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, our school has a broadcast center, and they want to add green screen to it. And they have that. We downloaded some free software, but it's very limited. Any ideas on the studio is Mac and PC?
Yeah, there's a number of ways you can do this. Do you want to do it in real time or after the fact?
I want to do it in real time for broadcast.
That gets a little harder, yeah. So the idea is, and weather folk the weather folk use this, the little folk. If you watch TV, you know that. If you see the weather person pointing at the map, they're really pointing at a green or blue screen. And in the software in the switcher is putting the weather map up on it. And that's why the weather person is looking at an off-camera monitor instead of the right behind them. They can see what it's looking like at home. But that's, you know, and that's ultimate for most, the most part, is what's used in television. We can do the same thing here with the hardware that we use, a TriCaster. And that's not a bad choice for a school that has a little bit of budget. It's a video switcher that has built-in green skiing. This is called keying, by the way. K-E-Y, keying.
Okay.
And the TriCaster will do keying in hardware. But you can do it in software. In fact, you probably already, have something like Wirecast. Do you have Wirecast?
Yeah, yes.
I think Wirecast does green screen.
Oh, cool.
So the trick on Wirecast is software. I think it's $400 or $500 that lets you do. That's how you do the switching. It's from a company called Telestream. It's production software, and it may be a plug-in for Wirecast. I'm not sure, but it's certainly. I'm almost positive they have keying.
Oh, so great. So
here's the key on keying. You got to. And by the way, the NewTek TriCaster 40 is very inexpensive. What is that? It's under $1,000. They made that specifically for schools, churches, and other budget constrained people. It's a little PC with hardware switching stuff in it. Blackmagic ATAM is another one that's under $1,000. So there are hardware switchers, and they'll probably do a little bit of a better job. The TriCaster 40 is $5,000. Never mind. I would just say use Wirecast. Now, here's the key on chroma keying. So to speak, you got to get a background that has a color that it does not occur in nature. And you know why, right? Because if the color happens to match the color of the pupil's eyes, then his eyes will disappear along with it'll turn into Central Park along with the background. Same thing with the shirt. So that's why we use green nowadays instead of blue. Blue was the original chroma key, but now they use green. And it's a weird lime green. You can buy that paint. There's companies that make chroma key paint. It's probably a good idea to do that. And the other issue is lighting, because you don't want a shadow cast on the green behind them. So there, the green screen is usually lit separately from the person in front of it.
Okay.
It's pretty, you know, there's lots of tutorials. It's easy to find somebody that can do this or online that can tell you how to do this. Walmart apparently sells the chroma key green, so that's good, the paint. Some people use sheets. You can even buy, and this is good if you want a portable chroma key, you can buy, it looks like a trampoline. It's stretched on a frame, and you can just put it behind the student. And that's handy, too, but what you don't want is any wrinkles. So if you use a sheet, you got to make it taut. Paint's good if it's in one particular spot. And then light it flat, and you're going to be amazed at some of the effects you can do. Chroma key has gotten so much better. What a great idea for a school. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. During the commercial break, we were playing with the green screen and chroma key because we have that capability in our video production studio. We use a TriCaster 8500. Is that what we use? TriCaster something. And it's kind of cool. So now with that, you can pick any color. Use a little dropper, and you say, whatever is a particular color that we want to replace with, you know, the New York City skyline or whatever. The one issue with the chroma key matting out the background is it's a little tricky if you have to move the camera, so don't. You can't pan across a chroma key because your actor will move, but the background won't, and it will make your viewers a little queasy, frankly. They do have very fancy green screen stuff, the networks use and so forth, that can monitor the motion of the camera and modify the background to match the little motion matching. And then it's very effective because it really looks like you're in some strange place. A lot of movies done that way. Most of The Hobbit, for instance, is green screen. If you look at the making of on The Hobbit, and Peter Jackson was very generous in showing people how it was done, they'll be on models or sets that are real, but at some point the model ends, and it's just green, and they paint it in later. I'm sorry. Sean Barry in our chat room said, "Wait a minute, The Hobbit's real." Yes, I'm sorry. I was mistaken. I didn't mean The Hobbit. I'm an alien. Scott Wilkinson's here, our home theater expert. He's the editor-in-chief over at the AVS Forum. Great to have you, the host of Home Theater Geeks on our network. You've seen a lot of this, I'm sure, in motion picture production. That's a lot of the special effects now are done on green.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I recently learned something very interesting, which is, you know, in this push to 4K, this new higher resolution format that a lot of people are talking about these days,
yeah,
both in the cinema and at home, I just learned recently that while they might shoot the movie in 4K,
yeah,
virtually all of the special effects, the computer-generated graphics, are only done in 2K.
Huh.
So
I don't get that.
Well, I don't either. I'm not sure why that's true. I'm going to be looking into it, but it's something that a number of professionals seem to confirm that, you know, while the actual live motion is either shot with like a Red camera or a Sony camera or something like that in 4K, or it's shot on film and then digitized at 4K, which is this higher resolution, the actual special effects are only done in 2K. Now, why that is, I don't know, but I find it very interesting. I'm going to a very interesting event this weekend, an expo called Cinegear, which is all about professional cameras, movie cameras, and other equipment. And they're showing a special screening of this new movie coming out called After Earth. Have you heard of that one?
No, I haven't.
It stars Will Smith and his son.
Oh, I did. They had a big press conference in Cancun the other day.
Yes. And it looks pretty interesting. And they're doing a special screening where it's being shown at 4K, this high resolution.
Yeah. So my movie theater is not 4K?
No.
I thought it might be. I thought the DLP screens, they might be. No?
Well, the projector might very well have a 4K resolution, which is 4,096 pixels across by 2,160 pixels down, up and down.
Yeah.
And a lot of digital theaters now have 4K projectors, but virtually none of them are actually showing a file with that resolution because there's no infrastructure to deliver that high, that much data to the thousands of theaters that have these projectors. So instead, they're getting delivered 2K material, 2048 by 1080, and the projector is upscaling it.
Huh.
Taking that data and then upscaling it, just like a HD TV would take standard definition and upscale it to high definition.
So we're bandying about a lot of terms here. Let's kind of back off a little bit. 4K.
Yeah.
4K is the future. They call it ultra high def or UHD.
Correct.
It's the future of movies and television. I thought it was already here for movies, but I guess not.
It's not. It's not.
And the idea is it's twice the resolution horizontally, twice the number of dots horizontally, and twice the number of dots vertically. So
correct,
it's very, it's hyper realistic. You know, when
right,
when they shoot on film, what is the resolution of a film?
Boy, that's really movie. That's actually an interesting question and a kind of a tough one to answer. The ultimate resolution of film really depends on the tiny little grains,
the silver
of the silver. I don't know what they use now.
Yeah,
chemically, but film is basically a piece of plastic coated with tiny little grains of photoreactive chemical.
Right.
And the light comes in from the camera.
So
it
does have a resolution. I mean, it has dots.
Yeah, sort of. But these grains are not equally spaced
right,
and perfectly uniform. Right. They're little grains of, you know, almost like grains of sand. Not quite, but they're irregular.
So we aren't seeing any super high resolution, even if we're watching film projected.
Well, film. Now, if you were to get down to it, I've heard anything from 6K to 8K
is what
you can sort of equivalently call film.
So really, when we went to digital projection in the theaters, we actually took a step back in terms of resolution.
And film purists are the first and vociferous to point that out.
I told you. So
I told you.
If you're seeing a really well-done projection on a screen in a movie theater that's yep. from a projector and a high quality print, you're probably seeing something that's better than 4K. Is that yes. right?
Yes, that is true. However, you said the right caveat with a high quality print.
Right.
And any print, any film print that moves through a projector, a film projector, is not going to remain high quality for long. It's going to get scratched. It's going to get dirt. It's going to have all kinds of problems. Plus the fact that as a physical film moves through the projector, it shakes around a little bit because the film is being jerked through the projector. Right. One frame comes up and it stays there for a few milliseconds. And then the next frame comes up and it stays there for a few milliseconds. And so this film is getting started and stopped and started and stopped and started and stopped many times, 24 times per second. And that causes what's called judder, which is a slight jiggliness in the picture. And if you get sensitive to it, like so many things, you point something out and all of a sudden you can't not see it anymore. And that certainly happened with me and a lot of my colleagues is they look at film and they go, oh, man, that's just so jiggly. It's hard to really watch. So, you know, it's true. With a high quality print through a film projector, you're going to see a higher resolution. But that's not going to solve the problem of motion blur, which at 24 frames per second, you're shooting a movie on film at 24 frames per second. And if something moves fast by the camera, it's going to blur, just like in a still picture. You take a still picture of something that's moving, it looks blurry in the still picture. The same thing happens in film, which is why Peter Jackson and James Cameron are advocating shooting at higher frame rates.
So this is interesting. So even though the film might be higher resolution, because it's 24 frames per second, it's kind of yes. it's that changes it. It gives it a filmic quality that we're used yes. to, but that's a matter yes. of just being used to it. So yes. one solution to this to get better, more accurate. The Hobbit was shot this way, although I never did see it in the high frame rate version.
I'm sorry you didn't. You're not going to see it at home that way because Blu-ray no. can't support can't that high it. Frame
yeah.
rate. Avatar 2 apparently will be in a high frame rate. I thought it looked beautiful. It did kind of have a bit of a more of a video look to it, and some people complained about that. And rightly so. You know, if you don't like that look, then you don't.
Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru. Thanks for joining us. Leo Laporte, you the bet. Tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Martin in Thousand Oaks, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Martin. Oh, wait a minute. Let me push the right button. I have to make a switch here so that I can pull you up. That's interesting. Let's go back to this. I messed around with my system.
Okay.
Here we go. Hi, Martin.
Well, long-time listener, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks.
I mean, long-time listener.
All right. Yeah, I started in 2004, but I've been doing a technology talk show since 1991.
Well, not that far, but a little bit after that.
You know, it's like 22 years. Did yeah. we even have technology back then? I don't remember.
I don't think so.
No.
I kept track of it, but I was living a very fast life, so... It wasn't a part of my life.
I think in 91, it was like, there's this new thing called the zipper. It's going to replace buttons, but we'll have to help you use it. No, you know what changed, and I bet this is what changed for you. I'm going to take a guess, Martin.
Uh-huh.
Of course, personal computers, putting a computer on your desk was huge. And then the internet, that was really big, and that was the mid-90s. But I think cell phones and mobile computing has made it more accessible for more people than anything before.
Can I make a fast comment on that?
Yeah.
Okay, so way back when, I happened to be in the position that I could afford a cell phone,
mm-hmm.
and it was LA Cellular. It was that big white brick with a big, long black antenna.
Yeah, the Michael Douglas phone, yeah.
Exactly. And my average phone bill, I am not kidding, was about $1,200 to $1,500 a month.
Were you a realtor? What is it you did?
Okay, so this is part of my question too. Is way back then I was getting into photography,
mm-hmm.
and we were at least for me, it was like the heyday of fashion photography.
Ah.
We were going from stills and the magazines and stuff into it was become fashionable or fashion that fashion photographers were starting to be music video directors.
Right.
So I had to be on the phone because I also helped produce a couple of photographers that I work for.
Oh, fun.
And so we could be anywhere on an actual photo shoot, and then we would get a call, and it was like talking to the studio and trying to coordinate all this stuff. And the good thing for us is a lot of my bill was paid by
the studio.
Somebody, yeah.
Yeah, the production company.
Yeah, and back then we had terribly huge budgets.
Well, what's the most famous music video you worked on?
Well, the funnest one that I worked on was Human League.
Don't You Love Me, Baby.
Yeah, and that photographer that shot that video, directed it, also was a big guest photographer, and he shot Anna Nicole Smith and all this stuff.
Oh, neat.
So there was a lot of crossover, which was pretty cool, but I don't want to go into the terrible videos. Oh, I can name one because of your last guest.
Yeah.
We shot Rod Stewart on actual video.
Oh, wow. That's how long ago that was.
Yes, and it was actually the worst video ever because it was too in focus, too showed all the
it's
flaws.
Too good.
Exactly. And they really didn't like it. And so it was like, but that's what you told us to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Wow, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've come a long way, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Oh, yeah. My goodness. I could tell you stories. One day I'm going to come up there and hopefully you have, you know, a few hours and I can share.
I'd love to hear it. What do you do today, Martin?
Well, mostly I'm a parent.
Good.
The world has changed.
That's a very full-time job.
It is. And that's what happened because when I used to do that, and that's why I married my wife, because she could put up with me being home 2 days out of the month, maybe.
Wow.
And
that's tough.
That's why I married her. Yeah. I don't know if she married me for the same reason, but I did. She stuck it out with me.
That's awesome. I'm playing Human League Don't You Want Me right now, the video of that.
It was pretty cool.
It was a night shoot. That's kind of fun.
Well, it was all over the place. Those shoots take, if you have a bigger budget, it could go 3 days, but back then. But now, towards the end, they were a very long day, and by the end of it, you hated that song.
Wow, they're even showing the old, what do they call, the videola editors with the film.
Yep.
Wow, that dates this.
And we didn't even know that that was old already.
No, that's hysterical. That's hysterical. Moviola, not videola. Moviola, yeah. Well, what can I do for you, Martin?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. So I have to get into the modern now. And for a while, so the last magazine... clients that I had were Japanese magazines, and talk about a dream job, right? So I'm going to even get it more dreamy. My subject matter was hula.
Hula hoops?
Hula dancing.
Hula dancing. Wow, yeah. Fun.
So in Japan, they have, you know, they're a different culture than us. They had three magazines that focused exclusively on hula dancing.
Of course they do.
Yep.
Of course.
We could never do that, right?
No.
And I was very fortunate because, number one, I'm from Hawaii. Number two, I was a long time in fashion, so I understood the editorial concept where I could, you know, get a concept, abstract it, and then get it done really quickly and usually wow them. So, anyways, they died, unfortunately.
The hula magazines?
A lot of the magazines. Yeah. So the producer...
That's the otaku culture of Japan. The original geeks where they would just fall in love with one little slice of culture and become obsessive about it.
Yeah. Oh, and they do. There's actually the biggest hula schools in Japan. They spend the most money. You know, it's just unbelievable. And the people that I know in Hawaii, they go to Japan to make money.
I can't mock it because otaku is really the predecessor to geek culture here, where we do the same thing. We get obsessed about Star Wars or, you know, whatever. So that's kind of the way it is here, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, one of the producers called me and said, you know, and this was about a year and a half ago, and said, hey, I just heard that Hawaii's going to have a subway. But I looked into it.
That's a joke.
It's still not right, and it's not for sure
yet.
Will
it go from island to island?
No, so it hasn't been approved. When I was a little boy, they were talking about it then, but it was above rail, and it was a couple, you know, like $27 million, if I recall. Yeah. Guess how much, if they do it now.
It's billions now, I'm sure.
Yeah, it'll be 22 miles, and it'll only go on the South Shore.
Wow. You know,
from Waikiki to a little past Pearl Harbor. So anyways, he said that he read an article, they're going to have 22 stations, and they're looking for art. And wouldn't you be interested in doing hula pictures for the...
There you go.
Right. Right. Okay, but that's how it started. Well, as it turns out, I did some research, and they... Okay, picture... If you get a photograph, right, where do you put it? On your wall, right?
Right.
Well, in Hawaii, all these stations will not have walls.
Oh, they'll be open.
Yes. So I asked them, well, where would they put the photographs? He's all, I don't know yet. So, okay, well, that started it.
Maybe they'll project them onto something.
Something. So then he came back and said, hey, have you heard of Kickstarter? And yeah, everybody's heard of Kickstarter. So, but nobody really knows about it. And so I finally decided to do it. And that's why I'm calling. I did it. I pressed the button, and then it said, I thought it would be instantaneous. It said, you got to get verified. They have.
Yeah. We've tried, you know, they rejected. We were trying to raise money to build a studio that I'm in, and they rejected it. They said, your existing business, this is really for new projects, so we won't do this. Indiegogo is one that we could have gone to that's very similar. This is called crowdfunding.
Right.
The idea of going out to your community, or maybe even people you don't know, and asking for money. And, of course, Zach Braff very famously just raised a ton of money on Kickstarter for, is it Veronica Mars?
Yeah. And there's a couple of other ones. But here's my big question about that is, okay, I mean, I keep up with the tech. I do a lot of Photoshopping, and, you know, I have digital cameras and digital video and all that stuff. And I'm getting into the last caller about green screening, about tracking it and stuff. And what's neat, if I could sidebar for a second, we have the power.
This is all, you know, I hate to tell you, Martin, this whole thing's a sidebar. I'm going to run out of time here in about a minute. So can we bottom line it here?
Yeah, and if I can hang up and you can talk about it, please. But now that I press the button, how do I get people to get to it?
Ah, by calling radio shows and telling them, what is the name of your Kickstarter?
Well, it's Hula Images, and I have a website called hulaimages.com.
Did it get approved on Kickstarter?
No, I'm waiting for the very...
You're waiting, okay.
Yeah.
So but people should go to hulaimages.com. I imagine that the Hawaiian Islanders would be the people most interested in supporting this.
Well, that's what I'm hoping, but that's the other thing is how do you
get they're beautiful.
How do you
That's a big question, isn't it? One of the things that digital technology has empowered is the ability to create this stuff for very low cost. You no longer need to have a publisher. You no longer have a record industry. You don't even need... You can be Zach Braff and raise $3 million, as he did, on Kickstarter create a movie or a TV show. So it's much easier, thanks to digital technology, to create stuff. The question is, how do you get the word out? Marketing. Well, maybe we could talk about it when we come back. Hey, thank you, Martin. I appreciate it. Good luck. Hula Images, they're beautiful.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, home theater, and virtual reality. Yes! So we were talking about Kickstarter with Martin, our previous caller, and how Kickstarter is used to crowdsource funding for projects. And it's such a great idea. As long as the people... And my only concern is that the people who give money... And Kickstarter's concern as well. Don't think of it as a store where you're going to buy stuff, but really as investing in a product that may or may not live up to its hype, may never even be delivered. Originally, Kickstarter was created for creative projects, movies, music, books, to help fund those kinds of things. If you had an album... Amanda Palmer, who formerly of the Dresden Dolls, wanted to make an album. And so she went to the folks at Kickstarter and said, here's the album, here's the idea, I want to do it. She wants to do a record, an art book, and a tour. She asked for $100,000. She got $1.1 million. There are a number of very well-known successes here. But this is really what the folks who started Kickstarter were envisioning. But it's gotten to be really more of a place where people go to fund physical products like the Pebble Watch. The Pebble Watch was a watch for iPhone and Android that asked again for $100,000. This was back in May of last year, almost exactly a year ago, in fact, and raised $10.2 million. The way it works is if you see a project you like, it mostly the projects have about a month to fund. You pledge. You say, hey, I will give you $10 or $100. And in every case, the people on Kickstarter who create these projects will give you rewards at different levels. In some cases, you'll get a product. In some cases, you just get a T-shirt or whatever. You don't have to pay until they reach their funding goal, and then everybody pays all at once, and presumably something happens. Although I can tell you I've given money to a number of Kickstarter projects which have never materialized. And so, it's not a guarantee, I guess. And let the buyer beware and all of that. And some of the stuff I've funded just turned out to be not very good. But that's okay. As long as you understand it, that's okay. So one of the projects I funded to Kickstarter was this. This is just came today. The Oculus Rift. It's a virtual reality helmet. And they were asking for $250,000. They raised $2.5 million, 10 times as much, and have made a develop. This is a development kit, so it's not even something you can do anything with. But you could put the helmet on, and you can, and then you can go into this virtual reality world that you will wander around in. See, that I like a little bit better than the other thing I ordered, which was this. This was the ostrich pillow. Now, I kind of did this in fun. The idea of this is it's a pillow that you put on your head, and then there it is. And then you put your arms in the holes, and you can sleep face down on a desk or in an airplane. And really, it not only does it really not work, but you look like an idiot. But I kind of knew. I mean, it wasn't like they didn't have videos of people looking like idiots wearing it, so I can't blame them. They raised quite a bit of money to make that ostrich pillow. So some of the things I have are cool, and some of them are not. I think that Martin's idea to put his Hula images on there is exactly Hula images for the soon-to-be, perhaps, created Hawaiian subway is a perfect idea for Kickstarter. That's the kind of thing Kickstarter was designed for, to support creatives and, you know, getting their dreams to come true. But he raises the most important question, and it's a question I get asked all the time. How do I get my website, Kickstarter project, product, video on YouTube? How do I get people to see it? How do I get it known? And this is, it's interesting, because what happened really was, in the old days, from my time, in the old days of big media, if you were a recording artist, your goal, your life dream, was to sign a record contract for a couple of reasons. The record company provided you with a studio, the wherewithal, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars, to go into a very expensive recording studio with an engineer and a producer and make a record. So they gave you money up front, kind of like Kickstarter would. And then they had a distribution network of record stores that they could you bring that record to that the kids could find it. They also spent some energy and time promoting the record, marketing, going to radio stations and getting to play it and all of that. And that's why you needed a record company. You couldn't really do that yourself, but except now you can do almost all of it yourself, can't you? You can easily make the record. It doesn't cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. In fact, you probably have the equivalent of a high-quality recording studio on your laptop right now. So that's no big deal. Distribution? Easy. That's called the internet, and it's free. You put your video on YouTube, you put your music on CD Baby or Amazon, and the world can be a path to your door. So the only thing that the record companies, the book publishing companies, the movie companies provided that we don't quite have a handle on is marketing. You know, of course, I guess you could go from radio station to radio station with your MP3 and say, please, sir, would you play it? But really, we have to find new ways of marketing that match the new ways of content production and distribution. And that's where the real, constantly where the real challenge is. It's easy to make a video, a very good video, with the current technology, and edit it and make it spectacular and put it on YouTube, and it's available to anyone, anywhere on the internet. More than 1 billion people can download it and watch it all over the globe. So you got the distribution handled. But how do you get them to find out about it? And that's a lot more challenging. It's one of the reasons I think one certainly this is what I do, and I think one must do, is focus on building a community. The reason Amanda Palmer is a good example, could raise all that money to make her album, is she had a built-in fan base who knew about her, who wanted to support her, and they were willing to step up. She makes the point, it's very interesting, she has a TED Talk about all of this. She said, my last record deal with a record label, the album only sold 25,000 copies. And the record label said, well, it's just not enough. We're not going to make any more records with you because it's just not a big enough audience. But interestingly enough, roughly speaking, the number of people who donated to her Kickstarter project to help her raise $1.12 million exactly duplicated that number, 24,883. So the same 25,000 people who weren't enough for a record label were more than enough for Amanda. So she had a community. She had a fan base, and she was able to capitalize on it. A fan base that wasn't enough for mainstream, but it was more than enough for the internet because we've eliminated the costs of making the record, distributing the record. We don't have to give money to DJs anymore. No more cocaine in the album. It's all over. All that expense is gone. So she can go directly to the fans, and that money goes directly to the production of the album and into her pocket. Let's face it. I mean, that's how she's making a living. So my suggestion, if you are an artist or creator, if you do videos, is to start building a community. And that takes time. It's not going to happen overnight. You're going to need a day job. Guess what? You're still going to have the waiter job. You're still going to have to work at Denny's. As you work your way up. But start building that community. The good news is that community doesn't have to be that big. It can be much smaller than it would have to be a mainstream music or television or movie star. But you've got to have the community. You've got to have the people around you. You've got to start reaching out to them, talking to them. It's more than self-promotion. It really is. In fact, sometimes self-promotion is a negative attribute. People don't like somebody who's a self-promoter. They want someone who's genuine, who's authentic, who's making something they like. But if you build that community, the sky is the limit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Heather's liking this song. I don't know what it is. What is this?
This is the first single from the new Daft Punk.
This is the new Daft Punk?
Yeah.
It sounds a little disco-y.
Disco. It's a total rip-off.
This sounds like this could be...
I mean that in the best way.
This could be KC and the Sunshine Band.
It's disco.
All right.
So you like or you don't like?
Well, I don't know. I have bad memories of disco.
Really? Oh.
What I remember.
Because that thing we were talking about earlier.
No, I was a DJ at that time. I had to play the Bee Gees Saturday Night Fever or whatever over and over and over and over and over and over and over.
So do you not enjoy it now?
Not really.
Oh, that's sad.
What? I don't enjoy disco? That's not sad.
That record was epic.
Yeah, no.
The
Night
bass
Fever.
Lines and
Night
stuff.
Fever, and... Night. No.
Mm-mm. Oh, come on. No. Alrighty, never mind.
Heather Haman, Mom, brought me a lovely badge. It says, keep calm and code on. I like this. This was from an event you went to at an Apple store. What's the story here?
Yeah, if people want to check it out, it's sheplusplus.com. And these two gals at Stanford who are just so sweet and charming as the day is long, have a little documentary, and it's to encourage girls to get into CS because they are disproportionately not represented.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's really an issue.
Oh, perfect. You pulled it up.
In technology, we've got to get more women. It starts with girls in school.
Yes.
Interested in, I think it's STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And
apparently, the girls are doing okay in math as far
good.
As percentages.
Good.
But in CS, there's a big drop-off.
Right.
So.
Right, and you know, it's no fun if it's just a bunch of boys. So let's get some women involved. Seriously.
Right.
Not to mention the fact that the products you get then all have kind of a male slant. Look at some of the games we're playing these days, and it'd be awfully nice to get some female point of view in there. So, yeah, look at that. It's 50-50 in calculus AB, but then by the time it gets to computer science, it's 20-80, 20% women, 80% men.
Isn't
so
that crazy?
They love the math. The women do well in math, which is a big change already, frankly, because it didn't used to be that way even. She++ is a documentary from Stanford, SHEPLUSPLUS.com. We'll put that in the show notes. But thank you for bringing I love the little badge. I'm going to keep this on my microphone. Keep calm and code on. Who should I talk to next, H-H?
Yeah, let's go to Dave in Houston, Texas.
Dave in Houston, Texas online. You tell me. Four, right? Hi, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. How you doing?
Man, I'm good.
This is not from Texas. Do they talk like this in Texas, too?
No.
Are you from Jersey?
New York.
New York, okay. I think it's more like, how y'all doing?
Yeah, howdy.
Howdy, boy, howdy.
Hey, I appreciate everything that you have online for free, and I'm also watching you on the Twitch Live.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah.
Nice looking babe there.
Thank you. I know people don't usually call me a babe, but I appreciate it. I'm glad I shaved today.
Hey, I was a commercial driver, and I've got to get the wireless Bluetooth. I was looking at the Blue Parrot.
That's the one all the drivers I know, everybody uses the BT250 because they say it's the best noise reduction. Of course, you're in the cab of a truck. It's noisy.
Right.
And I have talked to drivers in driving down the highway on this BT250, and it sounds amazing. I got it, and I was very impressed. Now, it's a bulky headset, but you're driving. You don't mind that, right?
Right. Then that's fine.
And it's – pardon me?
To have the windows down because I don't have AC. They won't provide it for me.
Oh, my golly. In Houston, they don't give you AC?
I'm not telling you.
That's a nightmare.
I'm not going to tell you.
That city was not made for somebody to be out in the summertime. Man, you have my deepest sympathy. So I don't know. I mean, with the windows down is a pretty challenging environment, but it has excellent noise cancellation. And if you go to the websites... There are websites for truckers where they talk about this stuff. And universally, it seems to be this is the one. It's $120 at headsets.com. They call it the Road Warrior. I bought one. Good battery life because it's got a big old, honking battery on the side of it. It's one ear cup. You can make it right or left ear depending on how you feel. I've used it, and it is. The noise cancellation is excellent. Highly recommended.
How about the Cobra T5? That was another one I was looking at. Are you familiar with that one?
I am not. I haven't tried it. I would just go get it. $80 on Amazon, even better. The B250 XT.
I see it for $69.83.
Even better. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know the Cobra, but because the Blue Parrot works so well, I wouldn't even go to any other choice. Just get it.
I'll go with your recommendation.
You will, and call me back. In fact, call me back with the windows down on a hot Houston day, and let's hear what it sounds like.
All right, will do.
All right, Dave. Good to talk to you. Take care. Drive safe. Michael in Germany. Where are you, Michael?
I'm south of Berlin in the Leipzig area.
Beautiful. Listen to how clear that sounds. It's amazing. You sound better than the guy who was in Houston.
Well, I'm calling through Skype, and I'm using a professional setup.
Sounds really good. Are you a podcaster? Why do you have a professional setup?
You've been briefed, haven't you?
No, I haven't. This is off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah. I am a podcaster, and that's what my question is about. As you know, podcasters can charge for podcasts through iTunes.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if this is ever going to change.
You mean, are people going to pay for podcasts as opposed to just saying, give them to me for free?
Well, yeah, can we charge as podcasters? I'm sure people would pay, or maybe some would not, but...
I'll give you my experience. How about that? Yeah. Started podcasting right at the beginning in 2004, and for the first 2 years I said, I will never accept advertising because I don't want any conflict of interest. I want the audience to pay for the shows. Then they'll know, that I represent them, they represent me, and there won't be any question. Because there's, you take ads, there's always going to be that question, well, does the advertiser get special treatment? I will assure you they do not. However, the question still arises. And so it would have been great. What I found was fewer than 2%, and I only asked $2 a month, by the way. I thought that was a fair amount. Only 2% of the total audience ever paid, ever. And the amount of money, which wasn't bad because we had a pretty big audience, it was around $8,000 a month, was enough to pay me a salary, certainly enough for me, but I couldn't have grown. I could have only done the podcasts I was doing, and I would have to edit them and do everything myself. And I wanted to get bigger. So after a couple of years, I finally backed down. I said, all right, I get it. Now, I wasn't willing to beg. Now, here in the States, we have public radio and public television. It's different in Germany, but they beg. They're ostensibly non-commercial, although I would submit they have as many commercials on as commercial radio and TV in the States.
Now.
They beg, and they beg constantly, and that's one way to get it up. But apparently, I've been told by folks at public radio that only about 4% donate. So that's still a small minority of the total audience. So how do you make living as a podcaster? Let's talk about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking about how to raise money, how to make money at podcasting. And don't go anywhere. Or did we already? I think he already gave up our German caller. But we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. But right now. No, he was calling from Germany. He was calling from just south of Leipzig. Speaking of traveling, it's Johnny Jet time. He's in his big old jet airliner flying all around the world. And whenever Johnny is somewhere not at home in Los Angeles, we like to think, where in the world could he be? Now, Johnny, unless you show me more of your scenery, I'm going to assume you're in a prison.
All right. I'm going to show you I'm going to show you outside the window right now.
Okay, outside. Oh, it's a round window. It's raining. I think you're in Cape Cod.
You're pretty close.
Well, it's somewhere in New England. Where are you?
Yeah, I'm in Connecticut.
Connecticut. You know,
it's where I grew up.
It was either Hobbiton or Connecticut. I knew it was either the Shire or Connecticut. Oh, so you're at home. You're in the family estate.
Well, I'm actually at my cousin's house right now. Last night I was at my brother's babysitting his three kids.
Oh, wow.
Alone.
Oh, wow. He's at the Jet compound in Hyannisport. And and Johnny is our travel expert. JohnnyJet.com is his website. Well, what do you got for us this week, Johnny?
All right, so I got a few things. One, by the way, I was just looking at Twitter, and I saw a deal tweeted for last minute from Houston to Athens tomorrow for round trip $855.
So our truck driver is going to Athens.
Not too bad, right?
Let me ask you, because this is something you probably know something about. You travel so much. Has the currency crisis in the EU, particularly in Greece and Cyprus, made it very – is it very cheap to go to Greece right now?
It made it a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
The hotels are hurting, and so they're happy, you can definitely find a deal.
And they're happy to get you there.
I heard 20% off at hotels, but I think it might even be greater.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I love Greece, but you know, you don't want to spend that much time in Athens. You want to get out and go out to the island.
We're going to the islands. Lisa and I are going to the islands in September. I can't wait.
Lucky dog. Yep. So, have you ever heard of the site Flightcaster?
No, tell me about it.
But by the way, I emailed you a bunch of links just now.
Oh, so golly. The email. Okay, I'll have to open my email. I haven't done that in a couple of months, but let's see.
But you go to flightcaster.com, or it's an app. And I love it. This week, by the way, I was in Memphis, Tennessee, speaking at a big conference. And one of my buddies is like, hey, I need to find out if my flight's on time. What are the chances of it? Because I heard there's bad weather in New York. I go, well, go to flightcaster.com. 6 hours before your flight departs, it will give you a pretty accurate prediction if your plane is going to take off or not. It's just for domestic flights, so only for U.S.,
and this is based on previous experience, the records of the airline.
10 years, but no, they also look at the where the plane's coming from. Know where the plane's coming from.
Yeah, and I've noticed that, and you probably know all about this. I try to avoid, for instance, if I'm going coast to coast, stopping in Chicago. A lot of airlines, United particularly, likes to stop there. And that there's always bad weather in Chicago. Summer, it's thunderstorms. Winter, it's snow. And it's
without a doubt.
Yeah, so I try to avoid that just because I feel like I'm going to get delayed there.
Denver.
Denver.
Well, actually, this week for that conference in Tennessee, it was a perfect example. I talked about it a couple weeks ago. I had to fight for the nonstop flight, and I had to find a cheaper ticket, the way to do it. And I talked about it a few weeks ago. But everyone else had to do a connection, and they were all delayed by hours, some even days, because there was nasty weather in Dallas and Chicago.
Yep.
So it pays to go nonstop, and there's tricks on how to get cheaper tickets. And actually, that's my next subject.
Yes. So let me reiterate, flightcaster.com, they've got iPhone and Android apps you could also put on your phone.
Yep.
I'm sorry. No, iPhone and
BlackBerry.
Fooled me. BlackBerry. BlackBerry. Fooled BlackBerry. Me. I didn't know. Wow. Haven't seen that logo in a while. What else you got, Johnny?
All right. So my wife, I was trying to get my wife a ticket from L.A. to Toronto for actually this past week. And I was doing it a couple weeks ago. And, you know, most people who are addicted to their miles, they only go to the airline website. So let's say there's a lot of United Mileage junkies out there. I was one of them in the old days.
Yeah.
And that's a mistake. If you just go to United.com or Delta.com or whatever and just put in your flights, you know, for example, for this flight, United was bringing up a flight for $525 nonstop.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's ridiculous. So I looked, you know, I looked at other online agencies. I actually have a really good booking tool on my site. So I brought it up and I saw that that same actual flight was for $347. So it saved me almost $200 just by spending 30 seconds of my time to going and checking out different sites. So the purpose, the moral of the story is do not rely on just going to an airline website. You'll still get your miles. And there's a lot of people out there that do it though.
Yeah.
And I emailed you the screenshots.
Okay.
That's a mistake.
Yeah. Never email me anything because I never check my email because it's full of stuff. Let me just go to my email real quickly and find it. So that's good to know though. Who do you use? Kayak, Hipmunk?
I use them all.
A
shameless plug, I use johnnyjet.com because we have a booking tool where you put in, you know, your city pairs and your dates, and then it brings up, you know, it'll bring up Orbitz, it'll bring up Travelocity, Expedia, Kayak. Kayak does a really good job out of all of them, but not always. So that's why you need to check the others.
And here's the screenshots. They're actually on johnnyjet.com. And finally, and I love this, give your miles to a soldier.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's Memorial Day weekend, and this is my favorite weekend of the year. And last Memorial Day, I was flying. And whenever I see a soldier on the plane and I get upgraded, which is not very often that I get upgraded, but when I do, I almost always give them my ticket.
Aren't you great? That's such a great thing to do.
But you know what? There's so many frequent flyers that don't know they can do it. Or they can – and in the past, I've actually upgraded myself and a soldier. So you can do that. It's the best way to use your certificates because if it wasn't for these guys, we would not be flying around the world.
That's right. And by the way, American Airlines, you give them a little shout out because they do such a nice job honoring our military.
They really do.
And that's something to note on Memorial Day. And I love that idea. And I'll tell you what, next time I'll give my upgrade to a soldier. That's a really nice idea.
Good.
JohnnyJet.com. This is why we love you, Johnny.
All right.
Have safe travels. Enjoy Connecticut and your nephews or whatever.
Yeah, it's my nephews, yes.
have a great time. And we will see you next week. JohnnyJet.com, the place to go, or follow him on Twitter. You'll always get – that's where he tweets out those great last-minute travel deals, at Johnny Jet. Thanks, Johnny.
All right, take care. Leo. Have a good one.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking before, Johnny, with – was it David from Germany who was – said, how do I make money in this business? And I mentioned that you can try to charge, but it's tough. And here's what I've come to the conclusion on all of this. The people who make money are the Wall Street Journal, newsletters like Ohm, Giga Ohm Pro. And for the most part, these are services that make their subscribers money. If you're willing to pay to read the Wall Street Journal online because you know it's going to make you money, it's going to pay off, it's an investment. You're not going to pay for something that's just for fun. The other things that make money online and do quite well are sites that train you. Lynda.com is a good example. She can charge for her videos, and there are lots of places that do this because they are imparting skills, again, I think, that make you money. Skills that help you get a better job or get better at your job or get a promotion. So if you want to extract money from people, it's either got to be something that they just can't live without. You know, Ultimate Fighting Championship seems to do pretty well on pay-per-view. Look and see what does well on pay-per-view. But we've never tried – well, we tried and gave up quickly asking people for money. And I've never requested or required money. My favorite is what we do, and what I've done for the last 30 years in my business is free ad-supported media. Love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. Miss Heather H., who should I talk to next?
Well, he really kind of put the screws to me. So, because Jonathan in Melbourne, Florida, is about to go into a store.
Oh.
And he's going to buy something.
Oh, dear.
Recommendation.
Oh, dear. Let's talk to him and maybe we can talk him down. Talk him off that ledge. Jonathan, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
Well, I'm great. So you're standing outside of a store, huh?
No, sir. I'm standing inside of a store right in front of the Surface display.
Ooh.
And I've been researching it a bit. I've watched your unboxing and review on your Twitch YouTube channel, and I feel like the Surface RT is the way I can go. So I'll give you a little bit of what I do, and maybe you can recommend whether or not to get this.
Okay.
Full-time student, but I'm also the student body president, so there are a lot of documents I've got to access on the fly while I'm typing reports and doing research and watching YouTube videos.
Okay.
I have a laptop that I use for my business. I own a small performing arts studio for kids. I use PowerPoint to create backdrops and write scripts.
Awesome.
And things like that. So I have a laptop for that. The tablet, I really just need for school and, you know, on-the-fly entertainment. I feel like the RT would do that.
I think it's perfect for what you want. First of all, you're in the Windows world. You want PowerPoint on that, even though you won't be doing PowerPoint on that. It'd be nice to have it on there, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and one of the things the RT comes with, which I like, is a full office suite. All of this for $499.
Right.
I would recommend buying the type cover. That's another $120 on top of it, because then you have the capability of really using it as a laptop.
Yeah, I'm using that right now.
Yeah,
and, it's
they have two kinds. Touch is a membrane that doesn't have any key movement. I really like the type, and it's only a little bit more expensive. I am actually.
I'm looking at this, talking to you. Oh, this is so cool.
I think, yeah, I'll be your salesman for the day, and I get no commission. You know, I'm not a huge fan of Windows 8, but I have to say, of all the Windows 8 incarnations, RT, the tablet version, seems to me the most sensible. So I think it's pretty good. Now, the only thing I might mention is that there has been rumor that Microsoft would announce the next generation Surface next month.
Oh.
But that's only rumors not even very good sources. So it could be, I'm just saying, but, you know, anytime you buy a computer, there's always that risk. It would be a little soon. The RT just came out in September, so it would be a little soon, or October. So it would be a little soon.
I can get by a month if you recommend waiting.
I don't know, because I don't know how credible that rumor is.
Well, use your psychic powers, Leo.
Well, I'll tell you why it might happen. Intel has a new chip. Well, see, I think it'll be the Windows 8 Pro that they'll update. I don't think they're going to update the RT, which is based on an ARM processor. So I think you're safe. If you like the RT and the price is right on the RT, I have to say, and you get a full office suite with it, I think it's a pretty good deal at $499.
All right. Well, thank you.
I'd say go for it.
I think I'll do that. And by the way, you recommended the Lenovo X220 for me for school a couple of years ago. Love that.
Yeah, so, Lenovo's great.
Recommendation this time.
Yeah, I think the RT is pretty cool. It's a little kind of just play with it. Make sure you like the size, the weight, the design, because it's a little squarish. It's a little funky, but it's not bad at all. And I think it's a pretty good little device.
So if all I need is Office, and a couple of apps such as, Dropbox, things like that,
perfect.
Then I'm good to go.
Yep. Doesn't have a lot of storage. Do get the 64 gig version, get as much storage as you can, because why not? You can't add anything. Hey, I really thank you for calling, Jonathan. Have fun with your new RT.
Thank you, Leo. Take care.
You're welcome. There are other, there's the Yoga, which is great. It's a Lenovo version. There are not a lot of choices in the Windows RT. This is very confusing. I should explain what's going on. Microsoft Windows 8 has several versions. There's a Windows 8 traditional desktop version. They call that Pro. There's the RT version, which doesn't run the same software, but it looks the same. Well, that's very confusing. It's running not on an Intel chip, but an ARM processor. It's got better battery life. It's more for the mobile. And I think it's actually pretty good. Acer, Asus, Lenovo all make RT-based tablets. But I think Microsoft's the one. I really do. Microsoft's the one. If I had more solid feeling that they were going to do this in June, I might say, wait, I just don't know. It seems awfully soon, you know, 8 months later to update it. I think it works pretty well. I think it works pretty well, and I don't think you need to worry about it, even if they do release a faster one or a better battery life one. It's pretty credible. It's a pretty good device. Gail is in Covina, California, our next caller. Hi, Gail. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hey.
Boy, after listening to all these calls this morning, this is going to be pretty boring.
Never.
But we are going to purchase, we decided on an Apple because my grandson is graduating from high school, and we don't think he is going to function with Windows 8.
Most of us don't function with Windows 8. No. Has he used Macs before?
No, but, you know, we went into the Apple store, and it just seemed so easy.
Absolutely. I you know, my daughter, when she went to college, I gave her a MacBook. Mm-hmm. My son is going to Colorado University Boulder in the fall. He'll get a MacBook. I think it's a very good choice. What is he studying? Is it, you said grandson or son?
Grandson.
What is he studying?
We don't know yet.
Yeah, good. He shouldn't know. He's a freshman.
History or government. Okay. That kind of thing.
I would call the school, first of all, and see what they recommend. Most schools nowadays, it doesn't matter, but sometimes there's a preference. If you were going to an engineering program, for instance, it might be better to get a Windows machine. But for history, for liberal arts, boy, there's nothing better than a Mac. Okay. The other thing is, ask them if they have a discount, because most schools will have a college discount.
Right. We know that. We just have to get his registration information, because exactly. We're going back there, and we're going to all purchase this together. But this is my question.
Yes.
We have been in the Apple store several times, and we've looked at the MacBook Air, and we've looked at the MacBook Pro. And, you know, for the same price, we get 128 gigabyte,
right,
flash storage, which I'm not even sure I know what that is.
It's a fast hard drive. The Air is more expensive because it's
100 gigabyte.
Right. The Air is more expensive because it's thinner and lighter.
Right. And it's very nice.
I love the Air. My son's been using a 13-inch Air all through high school. Loves it. One thing I would recommend, mm-hmm, and you have the luxury of doing this because school doesn't start for a few months.
Right.
Almost certainly, this rumor is, I'm convinced, true, there will be new MacBooks coming out in June.
Oh.
And the way Apple works is they won't change the price, but they will give you more for the same price. So you really don't want to buy it now.
Okay.
Apple's pretty good, I have to say. If you buy it within, I can't remember if it's 4 weeks. I think it's 4 weeks. A new one comes out. They will give you the upgrade for free. But I still would just wait. And that might help your decision.
Okay.
I think, you know, thin and light is great. The only issue with college is thin and light also means easy to steal.
Yeah, yes.
Not that it's that much easier to steal than a MacBook. They're both pretty thin and light.
Right.
You get more power with a MacBook. You can get a higher resolution screen, you know, the Retina display, which, mm-hmm, if he's doing photography or anything where a display quality is important, might make a difference. I'm a fan of the Air. I think that's the best choice out there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. If you want to talk tech, I'm ready. I'm here. I'm doing it. Oh, man, computers, the internet, portable devices like cell phones, laptops, tablets. We talk about anything with a chip in it, anything digital, anything technology, and I love doing it. If you give me a ring, I will talk about it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Heather is there answering the calls, our great call screener. It's, tell you, so much fun having you here, Heather. Thank you for joining the team. For many years, she worked with the other tech guy, Dr. Dina Dell, helping people with their bunions. And it's very similar, isn't it? It's kind of a similar thing, right? It's kind of techy and geeky. And
oh, totally.
Yeah. Yeah, Dean's great. He's just great. And he retired. I didn't steal you.
Yes.
He retired, and you got 10 years out of me, and then I'm sorry, it's over.
Okay. All's fair.
How old, just out of curiosity, was Dean when he retired? Do you know?
Oh, When did that happen? I want to say he was like 69 years old.
Oh, gosh. It's like a long way to go. 13 years.
Yeah. Well, depending. I mean, he kept going for so long. You're like, you know, you can quit.
Paul Harvey continued into his 90s.
Oh, he died on the air, didn't he?
I think practically. It's hard to tell. Paul Harvey, good. And that was all we heard.
Oh.
No, I'm sorry. Who
well,
should...
the gap between good and day was
yeah,
like
long.
A
it was not good.
Woof.
Day. Good. I know somebody who ran into him in the elevator coming down from his broadcast booth, and he literally he went into the elevator and said, "Hello, Americans." No. I adore Paul Harvey, and I'm not making jokes at his expense. He was one of the radio immortals, and really amazing broadcaster. Yeah,
trip people out like that when you have like
hello,
such a
Americans.
Remarkable voice.
Stand by for the third floor. Do you have another caller for me?
Yes, Keith in L.A. has a question for you.
Let's say hello to Keith in Los Angeles. Hello, Keith. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi.
Good afternoon, sir. I have a Kindle Fire HD with 16 gigs of memory, and I want to know if there's a way to increase the memory.
No, there's no, you know, that's a, and it was cheap, right? It was a couple $100.
Yeah,
that's an as-is device. You the memory is soldered onto the circuit board inside of that. You can't even open it up to get to it. And if you do pry it apart, you'd have to desolder. You can't. No. But I have to say, the price was right. Are you running out of Are you running out of storage?
Well, I'm running out of storage because I found a way to put my movies and everything on it.
Yeah.
And I want to do more.
Yeah, and I don't blame you. All you could do, you could root, if you really get ambitious, you could root it, which means to take over the device and get full access to it. Put Android on it, which probably would be a little bit smaller, but you're not going to get a lot of extra space. The good news is, they're going to come out with more and better and bigger and less expensive. We thought the Google Nexus 7 would have an update at the Google conference a couple of weeks ago. They did not announce that. The Kindle Fire has been updated already, and I think more to come. And, for $200, I think you got a great device. 16 gigs for $200, that's a great device. Remember, a lot of this stuff can live in the cloud. You can stream it. So you can stream Amazon movies. You don't have to download them to the device. I think that's what Amazon was thinking when they designed this. They didn't expect you to store a lot of stuff, so they didn't give you a lot of storage. You can stream the music from Amazon Music, which I do, by the way, and I love it. The amount of storage on your device has become less important than it used to be. When the iPods first came out, they got bigger and bigger and bigger. Now there's 160 gigabyte iPod, 128 gigabyte iPad, tons of storage. But on this Galaxy S4 that I just got, it's a 16 gig device that quite notoriously only has about 8 gigs free when you get it. There's not a lot of storage on this thing. Now, sure, you could put an SD card in it, but most of the stuff that you want has to be in the main memory. You run very quickly out of RAM on this thing. You couldn't put a lot of, I guess if you put it on an SD card in, you could put more music and movies on it. But really, the idea is, and this is Google's idea as well as Amazon's, is, hey, don't store it, stream it. There's only one negative, and I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking, Matt, or Keith. You're thinking, yeah, but what if I'm in an airplane or I'm offline? How do I watch a movie then? And that's the real drawback to that. But you can cache music ahead of time and cache a movie or two ahead of time. You just can't store a ton of stuff. So no upgradability there. For that price, that's not really surprising. Matt in Fontana, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Good, good. I'm a big fan. Watched you on the screensavers back how many years ago?
Oh, my. Many, many moons. 1998 to 2004.
Yeah, good times. So I actually upgraded to the Galaxy S4, and I was at Costco, and I ran into the guy there at the wireless kiosk, and I asked him about my unlimited data plan, and he says he knows a way to keep it. And so, sure enough, I got the phone, and he found a way to keep my unlimited data plan with Verizon.
Awesome!
And that's what I said, too.
That's fantastic. A lot of times I recommend going, this guy's not a Verizon dealer. He's a third-party dealer. And this is true when you go to any of these cell stores like Parrot Mobile or whatever, that they don't say they're an AT&T store or Verizon store. They have multiple different contracts. It's in their interest to keep you happy as a customer because they make money from your contract. And so they may even go the extra mile that a company store won't. You know, Verizon store, I'm sure, tells their employees, hey, whatever you do, don't mention this. We want to get them off that unlimited plan. But this guy doesn't, he doesn't, you know, he wants, you're his customer. He wants to make you happy, not corporate. So good deal. Right. How did he do it? Do you know?
Yeah, I do actually. So we had multiple lines on our account. And so basically he took the line that didn't have any data plan and put the phone on that plan. And then just moved it over.
Sure. That didn't trigger the reset. It was just added to your existing plan, your existing minutes with shared minutes.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, the best thing of all was with Costco, I was able just to pay the tax on the cost of the phone, not the full retail.
Excellent.
So it was like $220 out the door, literally.
That's fantastic. And do you like it?
I love it. I rooted it last night. So I got all the Wi-Fi tethering. And
I saw that the Verizon Galaxy S4 has been rooted. That didn't take long. That's great.
No, well, they had a whole month to do it. So
yeah, that's plenty of time. I have an unlocked Galaxy S4 because I wanted the European version with the Exynos processor.
Oh, lucky you.
Well, no, you know what? It's not that. Four cores versus eight cores, who cares? It's still way fast, right? No matter what. And I have to use it with T-Mobile as a result. But T-Mobile in my neck of the woods is quite good, so I'm happy about that. And they have the $70 unlimited plan, so it's unlimited everything. So,
that's great.
And no LTE, though. You've got that great Verizon LTE. It's fabulous.
Yeah, it really helps when I'm connected with my X1 Carbon on the Wi-Fi. And yeah. So
you use it as your internet access. No wonder you want to keep that unlimited.
Yeah, definitely.
Verizon's got to be unhappy about keeping you as a customer.
Well, I wasn't sure if I should report this or not, you know?
No, yeah, just don't mention your last name. That's okay, man.
It's
Frederick in Montana. I mean, yeah, that's it, yeah.
Well,
good. Congratulations on your good luck, your good fortune.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great.
Mazel tov.
I do have another question regarding my Windows 7. I got the Asus Formula V motherboard, and I updated the BIOS on it. I skipped the several versions on the BIOS, and now Windows 7, whenever I access like three or four of my hard drives, I get a error that says disk I/O error.
That's not good. Let me think about that. We're going to have to take a break, and I will give you your answer on the air, Matt. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You were working as a waitress in a cocktail bar.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, our caller before the break. Updated his BIOS, went a couple of steps ahead, and all of a sudden his hard drives don't work.
Yeah, that's not so good.
Not sure why, although you can, in some cases, roll back the BIOS. If you have an Asus, for instance, chat room's telling me the crash-free BIOS recovery will let you fix that. I don't know if it's a BIOS issue, but here's one thing I would do. When you update the BIOS, it may have wiped the memory, the configuration memory on the drive, on the computer, the motherboard. So if there is a setting in your setup, you know, when you first boot the computer, all of this is changing rapidly. Nowadays on most computers, you never see this, but underneath the brand name, there is a message that says, you know, press F2 or F10 or escape or delete to get into BIOS setup. This is to set up the software that runs before your operating system runs. It's the very basic input-output system of the computer, BIOS, that tells it how to access hard drives. Its computer has to know how to do that before it can load the operating system. It's sitting on the hard drive. So this very fundamental operating, mini operating system loads first, then loads the big operating system, Windows. You can change parameters in BIOS, in the BIOS setup. For instance, you can say what the boot order is. You can tell it what time it is. There's all sorts of stuff. In there, there's often something called Enhanced System Configuration Data, or ESCD, that the motherboard stores in a non-volatile part of the memory on the motherboard, something that will last between boots, knowledge about what hard drives exist and so forth. Resetting that sometimes will help this situation. It may be that it didn't know about these drives, or so I would try reset the ESCD. It may have a menu item that says that, or something like reset configuration data. PC Guy says if the drive was changed from AHCI to ATA, it would have BSOD'd on him if it was his main drive. But if I said that on this show, it would turn it into a foreign language program, so we won't say that. We won't mention that. Just restore the defaults and see if that works. 8888-ASK-LEO. Sorry, Matt, I can't be more help. That's a guy. You're a geek, obviously, and it's kind of a tricky question. Tom, in Warren, Ohio, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, can you hear me okay, Leo?
I hear you great. And yes, by the way, the chat room saying, I don't want to have to worry about this. You don't. This is for people who build their own systems and flash their own BIOSes. What can I do for you?
Hey, I'm looking for a new car, too, so I'm joining the club with you.
Yeah, what are you thinking about?
I'm looking at, I think, an Equinox. I like a crossover-type vehicle. It's got the nice 7-inch touchscreen interface with MyLink and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I got to have high-tech in the car. Got to have it.
Oh, yeah. I like the ones that they got. I think MyLink and Q for Cadillac, I think they got rated the best at CNET over there, or CES.
I should try it then. I should try it. I drive a 2010 Mustang, and because Ford was a longtime sponsor, and I've been very happy with the Ford Sync and all the hands-free in there. But, you know, yeah, the funny thing is you only upgrade your car every few years. The technology upgrades every few minutes.
Oh, right. Yeah. I thought Brian Cooley did a nice review on the Q system that's in the
I
Cadillac.
Will check it out. Brian's great. Okay.
It looks very nice, and it even responds to your hand getting close to the screen. It was pretty neat.
Yeah, that's what now the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration is saying, is that any new – their strong recommendations, and I think car manufacturers will pay attention to this – any new system like this should only require a total of 12 seconds eyes off the road in the full operation, no more than 2 seconds at a time. I think the whole idea is to not look down at all.
Right.
Not look down at all.
Driving
and so,
is a big problem.
Yeah, it's very big problem. And, you know, they talk about cell phones, but what's more distracting than that GPS big screen down there with all the stereo controls and stuff? You could spend hours reading that while you're driving down the highway. That's not safe.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of technology, but I like that stuff.
I do, too. You know? I want high-tech, but I want safe, and that's what's interesting. Yeah, that's the challenge.
I had a tech campaign today.
Uh-huh.
You have the Roku 3, don't you?
I do, indeed. I love it.
Well, I went to use it today. I was going to flip it on Twitch TV, as I usually do.
We have a channel on Roku. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it works great, and I get it high-def right on my kitchen. I sit there with coffee and watch Leo. And
thank you. Sarah. I'll wave right now. Hi, how are you? Good to see you. It's a radio show with pictures.
but anyway, the remote just crapped out. I'm thinking, what's going on? I said, well, I use the the headphone feature. Works great. And then what I found out I can do is it turns it into a wired remote, because I plugged the headphone into a Bluetooth speaker system, and then I got great sound, too. And that worked great, but the remote just quit working today, and so I called.
Oh, no. What a bummer. Yeah, this is one of the reasons I like this new Roku 3. So just to explain for those who don't know what I'm talking about, Rokus, or we're talking about, are a box that lets you effectively attach the internet to your television set. So with it, you can get Netflix, of course. That's what everybody wants. But you can also get Amazon. You can get other internet broadcasts like mine. We have a little app, and you can put it on there and get it at the channel store. So it effectively gives your television, just as your TV has access to the television world through your antenna or your cable or your satellite box, it gives you access to the internet-based television world. And we love it. And the new thing the Roku 3 has is a remote control with headphone jack. And when my mom was visiting me, she's a little hard of hearing. She tends to turn the TV up really loud. I said, Mom, look at this. Your remote, you plug in your headphones, and you're listening, and you're watching. There's even a volume control on the TV. This is awesome. And she really liked it. But your remote's died. I wonder What's going on?
When it didn't really die, I thought it did. I changed it, put new batteries, and I called tech support. I got some foreign country with some Oriental-sounding lady. Helped me okay, but it was kind of hard. I kept
What did they tell you to do?
She had me unplug the AC power.
Right.
And then put the batteries back in, and there's a button right next to, if you take the back battery cover off, there's a little button. She said, hold that in for 10 seconds, put it into some enhanced pairing mode, and it seemed like I revived it, and it was just acting like, because I'd put new batteries in, it worked for 20 seconds,
right,
and then it would quit.
So this is good to know. See, what these are, these devices are computers now, aren't they? And when you have a problem with your computer, what is the advice? Reboot. or reset, right? So now these things you can't reboot because they're battery powered and they don't have a control alt delete function. But interesting, they actually put a reset, that's what that button was, a reset button in the Roku remote. So you pull power, you hit the reset button, that resets all the parameters, or maybe even sounds like it puts it into a different mode. But that's the same thing with the Roku box itself. If you ever have problems where it gets sluggish, this is true of a lot of things. You unplug it, you plug it back in, let it reboot. I don't recommend it on any device like perhaps your DVR, your set-top box, any device with a spinning hard drive. Dangerous to unplug a device because it's pulling the power. If the hard drive is being written to at that moment, you can make it unusable, unbootable. But almost all TiVos and DVRs have deep in the menus a reset that will, in effect, do that through software. And it's often a good idea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
All my friends, the low rider.
Leo Laporte, low riding into the radio. Let's see, Heather, who should I, I'm just looking at, you got so many good people lined up. Should I talk to Richard next, or Ann or Herb or Libby or John? Who do you like?
Going with John because it's about traveling to Europe.
Well, there we go. We always like to talk about that. John is in New Milford, Connecticut, just down the road a piece from Johnny Jett. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Listen, with your luck, if you buy a car in 6 months, they'll come out with another model. So.
Yeah, that happens, doesn't it? I almost bought a new MacBook, and then I realized, whoa, wait a minute. They're going to have new ones next month. Hold on there.
Listen, I'm curious to know. I know that everybody tells me that the Verizon iPhone 5 is unlocked. But what I want to find out is, has anybody gone to Europe with a Verizon iPhone 5 and put the nano in it and bought the...
I'm sure somebody has. I think Sarah Lane on my team did. So here's what Verizon did. It's a CDMA carrier, so they don't actually use a SIM card. But the iPhone 5... for a long time, iPhone was GSM only, so they made a special iPhone 5 that is both CDMA, which is the technology, the cell phone technology used by Sprint and Verizon in the U.S. and mostly nowhere else, and they put a GSM SIM card slot in there, and then Verizon did something, and we know this is the case. We know this is the case. Verizon even acknowledged it. They did something pretty cool. While it's a phone that is locked to Verizon on CDMA, in other words, you can't use it with Sprint.
Mm-hmm.
There is no locking on the SIM card, so you could put any carrier's SIM card in there and use that iPhone 5 on that carrier. That means it's unlocked for the GSM and perfect for travelers. It makes it a global phone.
So I can buy a prepaid data card,
exactly.
data SIM chip,
exactly.
stick it in there.
Exactly. And depending on what country you go to, there's a wiki, somebody gave me, and I've forgotten the address, but I'm sure the chat room will give me the address again. The wiki for global data SIMs that has every country and who, what the prices are, and who, you know, who does it, you know, who offers the best, and so forth. Let me see if I can find that, because that was a great little wiki. You need anybody in the chat room know? Because where are you going? Where are you planning to go?
Italy.
Italy. I'm jealous. I'm going myself in the fall. One of my favorite countries in the world, but I don't know what the SIM situation is there. One of our chat mods, Inferno 10, says that when he was in Japan, he was able to use a SoftBank SIM in his Verizon iPhone, and he was absolutely able to do that.
That sounds great.
Yeah, so that's for Japan, but that means it does work, and I'm sure it would work in Italy. Let's see if I can find that wiki address, because that's what I really want to give you.
Wikimamo?
That's not... Mamo is an op... Is a, that's it. prepaidwithdata.wikia.com. That's it.
Perfect.
Prepaidwithdata.wikia. Well, Wiki's a good way to do this because you get people who are actually using the phones in those countries to say, yeah, it worked with this, it worked with that. That's a very good site to have in your back pocket. And I have bookmarked it, and it really helps for people like you who are traveling, who have a global phone. You just can't do this with every Verizon phone. But I think you've made a good choice there, John.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Leon in Philly, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Leon. Hello, Leon. Oh, I'm sorry. I got Libby in Claremont. Leon, you're next. Hi, Libby.
Hi, Leo. My question is, I want to do some videos for marketing purposes, and I would like to do some post-production editing to make myself appear thinner.
You and me both, Libby. You've seen it happen in the Dove commercials. They just carve the hips, you know?
So my question is there something, some kind of software that I can buy that is affordable, or is there a company that would do this that's affordable? I just don't know where to turn.
It's very easy to do with Photoshop for a still, but in order to do that in video... You have to have some pretty special software, because it's going to do it in one frame, and then it's going to do it in the next frame, and the next frame, and the next frame. It is totally doable. In fact, it's the dirty little secret of Hollywood that a great many of movie stars have that done in the movies.
Wow.
Yeah, I did not know this, but it's very common to do in post. But it's expensive, because if you think about it, that's a lot of frames, you know.
What I was afraid of.
Yeah, and I don't know of a way that's easy to do. Somebody's saying, use the photo booth circus mirror feature in the Mac. No, I wouldn't do that. I know what you want to do, and I would like to do it too. But I think we're just going to have to be on film, warts and all, I'm afraid. Until you're rich and famous and a movie star, until you're Tom Cruise, it is what it is.
Okay.
Sorry. Right. Wish I could give you... I know how you feel, Libby. Oh, wouldn't it be nice just to slim it down? It is not something that Hollywood wants you to know. But I've talked to many, many people in the industry say, oh, yeah, we do this all the time. We'll take a movie star who's just got a little, you know, a little more on the hip, a little more on the gut, maybe a couple of extra chins. No problem. Fix that, and then they don't just fix it, you know, in one scene. It's fixed in the entire movie, and it's done far more than we think. And the only reason I mention this, I mean, that's fine. Movie's a fantasy world, of course, it's fine. But the only reason I mention it is of course, then we get our body image, our idea of what a good-looking human looks like from that. And we've known forever that in magazines, none of that's real. Dove's done a great job, I think, of explaining how that works. The billboards, the magazines, all of those are heavily edited. Well, first of all, it's makeup and lighting, and then Photoshop. But I think it's important when you look at a movie to remember it's all fantasy, including how the movie star looks. The way the movie star looks is completely engineered in many cases. Don't worry. You don't have to look like Tom Cruise. And so, Libby, I think this is one of the things that YouTube is going to bring us, and I think already has to some degree, is a little more freedom in terms of body image. Because nobody's going to do this, you know, for a YouTube video. You look the way you look. You look on YouTube, there's a lot of people who look normal. Now, one thing you could do pretty easily, but it'll be obvious you've done it, is you could shoot it. This chat room's going, well, just shoot it in wide aspect ratio, 16:9, and then deliver it as 4:3. Everything will be squeezed. But it won't just be you, it'll be everything. Everything will look a little squeezed. So, I completely sympathize. I don't think there's any way to do that easily. It's very expensive Hollywood style post production. Leon in Philly. Now you're on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, I've been listening to you since you were on Tech Talk years ago.
Thank you. I'm so glad to have you still in the family.
I'm in. I'm bedridden now, and on Wednesday, they're going to deliver my new laptop.
Awesome.
And I have a desktop, which is 16, which is Windows 7, 64-bit. And I bought an HP laptop, which is 16, 64-bit. And I have an older Belkin cable, which I've used before to transfer stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The question is, can I use it to do 7 to 7?
Yeah.
4-bit.
Yeah, the number of bits won't matter. You'll use the built-in, Microsoft has a built-in transfer utility that'll work.
Yeah.
And you just use that crossover cable. I presume it's, is it USB or is it an Ethernet cable?
USB.
Yeah, it's a specially built USB crossover cable. That should be no trouble at all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. In a galaxy long ago and far away. I still get chills when I hear this. Happy Geek Day, everybody! I forgot to mention, this is officially Geek Pride Day.
Oh, yeah, Dennis is baking a cake as we speak.
May 25th, because, and it's also called Towel Day.
Got my towel on.
And that's because Douglas Adams, the creator of the amazing Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, passed away on this day in 2001. It's hard to believe it was now this long ago. And I remember when that happened. And we on Tech TV, on May 25th, we wore our towels because, of course, if you've ever heard or watched or listened to or read the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you know, a towel is something every geek should have with them at all times. And it is the anniversary. Let's see, it was in 1977, right? So this is now the 36th anniversary. That can't be right. Of the release of the first Star Wars movie, Star Wars Episode 4. 36 years? Is that, can that possibly be?
Yeah, no, I think that is right.
Holy moly. So happy Geek Pride Day. Hope everybody's got their towel. And, wow. Star Wars is 36 years old.
What year did you say?
I think 1977. I remember vividly getting in line in New Haven, Connecticut. No, maybe it was San Jose. It was San Jose.
Okay.
With a lot of geeks. Man, there were a lot of geeks to see this new movie that had just come out. We love George Lucas because of American Graffiti. And the word on the street was this is going to be the best sci-fi movie ever. And everybody was very excited. And I remember it was opening day and I was in line to see this in 1977. In San Jose at the, they had a big domed theater there in Silicon Valley. Wow. Memories.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Dick D. Bartolo is here. He is Mad Magazine's maddest writer. And, you know, Star Wars may be 36, but he's been writing for Mad Magazine now for a total of five different decades.
Yeah. That's actually, I have my letter from George Lucas hanging in my bathroom at this moment.
Did you write a parody of a Star Wars movie?
Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Out, I call it. Right. Yeah. And he sent a letter to myself and Tim Watt Drucker.
Did he enjoy the parody?
He loved the parody, and the great thing was 3 days later, we got a letter from Lucas's attorneys. He's suing us for copyright infringement, yada, yada, yada. And so Gay, I said to Bill, what are you going to do? He says, give me that letter George sent you. He made a Xerox, and he scribbled across the lawyer's letter, gee, your boss George liked it.
And that was that.
Back, yeah, he sent back our letter, and that was that. Yeah. Exactly.
I think people might know, but if they don't, Dick D. Bartolo wrote many of Mad's most famous movie parodies, including Star Wars. Did you ever get sued for any of these?
No. The closest was that letter. Normally the studios like it.
Well, it's legal. It's parody. And, of course, it's protected speech. So whether they like it or not is immaterial. However,
that's true.
I think George had the right idea. That is an honor to get parodied in Mad Magazine.
I would think.
Yeah. So Dick brings us, besides being this funny guy from Mad Magazine, he brings us gadgets each and every week. And I got one for you, and you can do one for me.
Oh, you have a gadget too?
Yeah. I just got this, and I love it.
Look, Good. All right. Mine are quickies. It's from a company called Exodus, X-O-D-U-S. And they have a technology they call low glow technology.
Low
and
glow.
It's very low glow. So what it is, and I have two items. The one that I think it works best in is their glowing key fob. So it's a keychain that is constantly glowing. Hmm. So when you throw your keys in your backpack or in your purse or your knapsack, when you open it and look in, you can see the glow and then reach in and pull out your keys. And then if it is nighttime, you can push a button and turn that into a flashlight. And it's not one of those things where you charge it during the day, it sucks in sunlight or natural light. They found a way to take a 2032 battery, one of the very popular little button batteries, and get a year's worth of glow out of it. So they used this technology in something they called mini LED guide lights, which you can place on stair steps or by light switches at night. And they will glow for a year for you to find things in the dark. So it's a clever idea and very inexpensive. The glowing key fob, I think, is $12 on Amazon. And you can get a kit with four mini LED glow lights on Amazon for, I think it's $15. So it's a great use of small button batteries.
Very handy.
Get a life out of them, yeah.
And they're bright enough to just kind of see them anyway. See,
exactly. And as I said, the little keychain thing actually becomes a flashlight if you need a quickie flashlight.
So it's bright enough to do that. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, very good.
So my gadget is called the Card Ninja, and I ordered this because Lisa's, whenever we go out, Lisa doesn't want to carry her purse, so she gives me her driver's license and credit card to carry, and I thought but she keeps her iPhone with her. She doesn't want to give this up. So what this is it's a little pouch that glues on the back of your phone.
Oh,
it's stretchy, so it can hold cash. It can hold credit cards. I've got four credit cards, my driver's license, and cash. Now, the first one I saw, and I don't know if they invented this and were copied by other companies or if they copied another company. I don't know who came up with it.
Is that big enough for a spare battery?
No. Yes. Oh. Wait a minute. What an interesting idea. I should get my battery. Sure, it would be. You could put, it wouldn't work. You'd have to take off the cover and still put the battery.
Yeah,
that's big enough for a battery. What a good idea, yeah.
Okay.
So the first car company that I saw that does this is called Card Ninja, and they're $20. But then I shopped around a little bit, and I found another company that makes these for about $13, a little bit less, and they come in colors called Sinjimoru, S-I-N-J-I-I pouch. So S-I-N-J-I-I pouch. But they're cheap, and you know what? They really work. And they're very handy, and they'll glue on the back. You know, it's a 3M adhesive, so you can pull it off. But this is a great way to have something always available.
Yeah, that's great.
And you can go clubbing or whatever it is that you. I took it to the ball game, and so I didn't have to carry my wallet.
Nice,
fun.
Leo,
huh?
Just move your thumb, Leo. I can't get Lisa's.
Did you miss the credit card number there? Let me.
No,
let me
I got
pull it.
No,
out
I just
again.
Need.
Okay,
I just good. Need the security code. Oh, I got it. Okay, thanks.
Dick DiBartolo, go to gizwiz.biz. That's his website. That's where you can play the What the Heck Is That game. It is a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. You're going to be giving away, the August issue of Mad Magazine?
We'll be giving August Mad away, and that will have
what's on the cover? Do you know?
We haven't done the cover yet, but Storage Wars is in there.
Oh,
the takeoff
good.
I wrote on Storage Wars.
Oh, good.
Wars.
All right. I can't wait. All you have to do is figure out there's a close-up picture of a gadget. The truth is you don't have to figure out what it is. There's 12 autographed Mad Magazines for the right answer, 24 for the wrong answer, as long as it's clever. So make up
clever.
A clever
That's
answer.
Us.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about us, but it's our audience.
We attempt it.
We attempt it. They achieve it. Thank you, Dick DiBartolo. Stick around for the Giz Fizz right after this show on most of these internet stations. I don't think I have enough time, Heather, to take another call, I'm sorry to say. Normally, I could get one more in here, but I think I've wasted our time. So I just want to thank you for being here, Heather Heyman. Thanks to our new musical director, Nathan Staton, who's doing such a great job. Don't you love that? And you're going to put some music together for us.
Having a little input.
So we can have some Daft Punk next time.
Though everyone hated it.
Yeah, that album didn't get great critical appeal.
There's another song that I think we'll play.
All right. Hey, thanks for joining us. Have a great Geek Day. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.